Call the next case.
Wednesday versus Clark, Director of Virginia Department of Corrections. I am Yakima Collins, Counsel, Patrick Quinlan, and LBO Assistant Attorney General, Appalachian Counsel.
You may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Ivan Yakub. I represent this point in this appeal. Your Honors, the case arises out of a denied writ of habeas corpus. We filed two assignments of errors in this case. First of all, whether prior trial counsel, whether he violated Mrs. Fuentes' Sixth Amendment rights under the performance prong of Strickland, and secondly, the prejudice prong of Strickland. Your Honors, in this case, Ms. Fuentes, she pled guilty to grand larceny. When she pled guilty, Your Honors, she was a lawful permanent resident. What is clear from the record, Your Honor, is that someone who is a lawful permanent resident in the United States and pleads guilty to a crime which involves moral turpitude is deported. And there's no wiggle room around this. I mean, this is the law, the immigration law that's been enacted. Knowing that, Your Honor, trial counsel had a duty to inform Ms. Fuentes that that if she pled guilty to grand larceny, she would not only would she be subject to deportation, which is what happened, but that deportation was mandatory, was a certainty, and that's not what happened. She signed a plea form at the trial hearing, and the plea form states that she may be subject to deportation. There's a plea colloquy where the judge asks her whether she understands what the plea form says, and she says, yes, I understand what it says. And the plea form says exactly that, that she may be subject to deportation. But the truth is, it's not only that she may be subject to deportation, it's that she will be subject to deportation, and she will be deported from the United States.
But see, the part of the dilemma of this is we're getting a lot of these cases, as are courts all across the state courts, particularly all across the nation, and we can never figure out what ICE is going to do. I mean, sometimes they exercise administrative leniency. They have the right to deport you, but they choose not to. So why isn't the advice, you may be subject to deportation, absolutely 100% correct?
It's correct, but yet it's incomplete, Your Honor, because not only will she may be subject to deportation, she will be deported. And I understand that there's an issue of whether...
When you said she will be deported?
She will be deported.
Well, we've had cases here where we are aware in the record that the immigration authorities decided not to deport somebody despite the fact that they had the authority to do it.
Well, Your Honor, in Padilla versus Kentucky, the Supreme Court addressed two factual issues, right? First of all, when the statute is clear by its nature, right? If it's absolutely clear that the person will be subject to deportation, then the attorney has to give her the correct legal advice. Say, look, you know, if you plead guilty to this...
Let me ask you, do you do immigration work?
I do, Your Honor.
Well, then you have to know that there are people who could lawfully be deported that are not.
Yes, Your Honor.
If you do that for a living, that's what you're arguing when you go to these administrative hearings. Don't do it. We know you have the authority to do it. Don't do it.
Well, Your Honor, I mean, there are certain classes of cases where the attorney general has no authority but to initiate deportation proceedings. Congress created a statute which states the following. It says, if a person has been admitted to the United States, and she was admitted to the United States by virtue of being granted lawful permanent residency in June of 2011, and the person commits a crime which involves moral turpitude, within 5 years of admission, the crime happened in August of 2011, she is subject to deportation, she will be deported. Of course, the agency at some point can say, well, the fact that there's a deportation order against you, we may not implement it. But she has a deportation order against her. She loses her lawful permanent residency status.
May I interrupt briefly? But following up on the Chief's question to you, you know, even the Fourth Circuit, as you know from the recent opinion that was brought to our attention by the Attorney General, I mean, this law is very fluid. Fourth Circuit reversed the position that the Bureau of Immigration Appeals evidently had for a considerable amount of time with respect to grand larceny as a removal offense. And if we were to adopt your view that the defense counsel has to precisely predict exactly the place in the Byzantine immigration code and then predict the proper interpretation of it and then predict what a federal court might say a year later about it, I don't know that any one of us, I know I could not do that.
Well, Your Honor, the Fourth Circuit decision addresses grand larceny is a theft offense.
Right.
There's a separate deportation ground for aliens who've been caught.
My only point is that the law seemed to change, and according to one of the parties in that case, quite abruptly. Since this discipline, the immigration law, is difficult for the best of us to predict, how can we require the level of certainty and specificity that you're asking us to require?
Your Honor, I think the Fourth Circuit decision was not a surprise. If we look, if the court looks, analyzes Fourth Circuit, actually, if you go, the court looks at U.S. v. Johnson, a Supreme Court decision from the United States Supreme Court, the case in that issue, the case at issue in Johnson was whether battery was a crime of violence. And the argument was made that it's a single offense, it's an indivisible offense, the categorical approach. And since Johnson, 2005, that has been the case law. The Fourth Circuit hasn't addressed that issue until Omagharabi, actually until Descamp decided the Supreme Court decision, and then Omagharabi decided in the Fourth Circuit. But I think it was clear that that would have been the result. But the thing about Ms. Fuentes' situation, Your Honor, is not whether she's going to be convicted of a grand larceny offense, an aggravated felony offense for grand larceny. She's not. The issue is whether grand larceny is a crime which involves moral turpitude. And I don't foresee any decisions from any court saying that a larceny offense does not necessarily involve an element of moral turpitude. And that's what the statute we're dealing with.
But suppose this counsel in this case, purely hypothetically, had said, look, I've done my own independent research. I'm not an expert in immigration law, but I think the best interpretation of the statute is you will absolutely, certainly face deportation. And then the Fourth Circuit, 6 months later, says, no, that it's actually not a categorical approach. It's a modified categorical approach. And there are caveats here, blah, blah, blah. That's the risk that we're worried about, is requiring that level of specificity means it may be a hill that you occupy very briefly before another hill is overtaken.
Well, Your Honor, I think that was addressed by Padilla. There are certain cases where the statute is abundantly clear. For example, in Padilla, the issue was whether a drug offense led a person to be deportable. And the Supreme Court said, of course it does. I mean, the statute says any alien who's been admitted to the United States and has been convicted of a drug offense, as set forth in Title 1821, Section 21, is subject to deportation. In Padilla, the person was, I think it was a lawful permanent resident, was convicted of a drug offense.
Would that phrase be sufficient in your analysis if this attorney had said, you're subject to deportation, as opposed to you're at risk of deportation?
I think it has to be more clear than that, Your Honor. I think it's definitely a starting point, but it has to be more clear.
More clear than subject to deportation.
Right. I mean, you may be subject to deportation is not clear enough, because then in her mind, what she's going to think is, well, I may or may not be deported.
Well, counsel, how can you say that when the wording of the statute itself is deportable as opposed to will be deported? And the holding of Padilla, as I read it, it is our responsibility under the Constitution to ensure that no criminal defendant, whether a citizen or not, is left to the mercies of incompetent counsel. To satisfy this responsibility, we now hold that counsel must inform her client whether his plea carries a risk of deportation.
Right.
Even Padilla doesn't seem to say that you have to tell them they will be deported.
I think, Your Honor, what Padilla says is it creates two factual scenarios. One is, in cases where deportation is a certainty, and those are the language from Padilla. If deportation is a certainty, and this is the same case we have here, then counsel has to properly advise the criminal defendant that's going to happen. Of course, something may not happen. The executive may decide to, as the Chief Justice said, may exercise its grace and not commence proceedings. Because the prosecutor, in every single instance, has discretion not to, not only in immigration proceedings, but in criminal proceedings, has discretion not to prosecute. But the fact is that if the executive exercises discretion to prosecute, she will be, not only is she may be deportable, she is deportable. I mean, there's no wiggle room around this. She will be deportable.
But deportable and deported are two different things, aren't they?
Yes, Your Honor. Deportable simply means that she'll be placed in deportation proceedings. She won't be deported until she is on a plane back in Honduras.
So what is wrong about the statement of counsel in this case, you may be subject to deportation?
Because she may be subject to deportation only in the beginning. But the second part of the analysis should be, and by the way, not only are you subject to deportation, you are deportable. And counsel didn't say, well,
Deportable means subject to deportation, doesn't it?
No, Your Honor, I think it means a little bit less than that. If someone says you may be subject to deportation, there's wiggle room in what, you know, in what the person, the criminal defendant, thinks. It's like, will I be subject to deportation or not? Does the statute regarding crimes involving moral turpitude within 5 years applies to me or not? Here, there is no wiggle room. You know, she was admitted. And within 5 years, she was convicted of a crime which involved moral turpitude. So she was not only may she be subject to deportation, she was deportable, and she will be deported. She's in actual deportation proceedings as we speak. So
but in this case, counsel actually went so far as to say, right, deportation is the most likely consequence of your guilty plea unless you can come up with a remedy.
Your Honor, there is no factual finding from the court regarding that. He said that in the habeas proceeding, and in the habeas proceeding, Your Honor, the judge simply stated that he reviewed the evidence and the advice was proper. But there was no actual factual finding.
The point of the question, though, is on appeal, ties go to the runner. And the appellant has got to show that the trial court did not make that finding. We will presume all inferences and all facts favorable to the party below. So with that in the record and the other statement that the counsel was told she was, quote, illegal, end quote, isn't that the starting point of our analysis of how to apply the legal principle?
Yes, and because there is no factual finding, Your Honor, on the performance prong, that's the starting point, but it's not the end point. The end point is, let's look at counsel's advice during the habeas proceeding. He testified, if you plead guilty to petty larceny, you're arrested, and then you can get a bond. And as we said in our brief, she wasn't even bondable. So we know counsel didn't have a grasp of immigration law to begin with. Of course, counsel didn't even know she was a lawful permanent resident.
Well, and to that point, in addition to expanding Padilla, aren't we, if we accept your position in this case, to expand Padilla the way you're suggesting, then we're actually requesting or requiring, ethically and otherwise, for every criminal defense lawyer who represents an immigrant, they must be an expert in immigration law.
Not an expert, Your Honor, but definitely when the immigration...
Well, you said previously they need to be able to predict what the Fourth Circuit would do in a case...
I don't think the person needs to be an expert, but at a very minimum, the person, the criminal defense attorney, must advise the immigrant what the immigration consequences are. And that's the problem with this case. He didn't do that.
Do you think at a minimum the attorney needs to advise the client to seek advice of immigration counsel?
Yeah. In Padilla, it talks about when cases are complex and the statute's not very clear, that needs to be done. But on this case, where the immigration consequences are clear, what happened? You know, the criminal defense attorney has to advise the criminal defense criminal defendant of the immigration consequences.
And she wasn't bondable because I'm not sure if bondable is a word. She was not eligible for bond because she was a legal resident arrested for a crime of moral turpitude within 5 years. Is that right?
No, Your Honor. She would. If counsel testified that she was here, that he believed she was here unlawfully. So in his mind, he said, well, if you plead guilty to petty larceny, you'll be arrested, and then you can get a bond. But someone who is unlawful in the United States and commits a crime which involves moral turpitude is not subject to a bond under 8 U.S.C. 1226C. So she was not able to obtain a bond in the first place. And that goes to show... The misunderstanding that trial counsel had in the immigration process. So when he says, "Well, I advise her on the immigration consequences. Well, we know that what his advice was erroneous. I'd like to reserve that very few seconds I have left for rebuttal.
13 seconds.
May it please the court. Good morning. Catherine Adelfio on behalf of the director. In this case, Ms. Fuentes failed to prove both that she was misadvised by trial counsel and that she was prejudiced by this alleged misadvice. I want to be clear about exactly what her claim was. Her claim was that trial counsel erred in failing to advise her that she would be removed as a result of her guilty plea. Her claim below did not address at all any advice with respect to the immigration bond. She didn't make that claim either in her petition or at the evidentiary hearing, and as such, it's not preserved. To the extent advice was hypothetically incorrect with respect to the immigration bond, that claim is not preserved in this appeal. In any event, trial counsel's advice regarding the likelihood of her removal was absolutely accurate. He told her that the most likely consequence of her conviction was that she would be removed absent some form of immigration relief. This is exactly the advice that the petitioner argued below should have been given to her. At appendix page 156, Fuentes, by her counsel, acknowledged that 100% of non-citizens who are subject to removal are not actually removed. As such, Mr. Hassan's advice with respect to her removal and when he stated that the most likely consequence was her removable unless she got some sort of relief was accurate and reasonable. If counsel had told her, you will absolutely 100% be removed, that would have been unreasonable advice because, as this court has noted today, immigration laws are Byzantine, they're confusing, they're subject to change, and I think that it would be unreasonable for counsel to give that advice. In sum, as required by Padilla versus Kentucky, trial counsel alerted Fuentes that she was subject to removal, and he told her that unless she obtained some form of immigration relief, the most likely consequence of her conviction would be her removal. The court has no questions.
When you talk about it being reasonable, may I assume that you mean that it was complete?
That's correct, Your Honor. And I would just note that he did also suggest that she contact an immigration attorney in addition to providing this advice with respect to whether her conviction or her status rendered her removable. Additionally, and alternatively, because the petitioner has to show both prejudice and deficient performance, the circuit court should be affirmed because Fuentes failed to show that it would have been reasonable for her to go to trial. The evidence against the petitioner was overwhelming, and at no point in the proceedings did she ever allege that she had defenses. Thus, had the petitioner gone to trial, the only likely outcome, or the only possible outcome, was her conviction.
Well, there were full confessions.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And in this case, unlike in Zemin, any conviction would render her deported.
Absolutely, Your Honor. This case is absolutely distinguishable from Zemin.
A conviction for without any jail time.
That's correct.
Would render her deported.
Absolutely.
As long as there was a crime of moral turpitude?
That's correct, Your Honor. It would be pure speculation and reliance on the existence of a lawless fact finder for this court to find that had she gone to trial, the result of that trial would be anything other than a conviction. Thus, the choice facing the petitioner was to go to trial, face 20 years of sentencing exposure, and then be removed, or plead guilty, receive no active jail sentence, and then be subject to removal. Many courts across the country have found that in that sort of situation, it's reasonable for a, it would be unreasonable, excuse me, for a petitioner to go to trial.
Well, it's not so much as it's unreasonable, it's futile.
That's correct, Your Honor.
I mean, you get the same result.
That's correct, Your Honor. And in this case, certainly the evidence showed at the evidentiary hearing that there was no chance of success at trial. Unless the court has any further questions, I rely on my brief. And because the petitioner failed to show both that she was misadvised and that she was prejudiced by the misadvice, I'd ask you to affirm the decision of the circuit court.
All right, thank you. You have 13 seconds. Use it well.
On the habeas petition, Your Honor, the trial judge did not make a finding of fact regarding the performance prong for that very reason. At a very minimum, you know, either this court reviews it de novo or has to remand it to find out exactly whether. I see that my time's up.
Just finish your sentence anyway.
Do a de novo review or remand it for, you know, for a factual finding on whether trial counsel Mr. Hassan told Ms. Fuentes that.
All right. Thank you very much. Call the next case.